Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, another night of aggressive Josh Richardson, but it was Kelly Olynyk, the most popular player in Wizards history, who hits the game winner in a 113-112 nail biter in Washington. I'll break down the game and then answer some of your Twitter questions later on. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every news item, rumor, game, and more. My name is David Ramil. I am a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and Fansided, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13. My usual co-host, Wes Goldberg, is traveling to Chicago and isn't available to record the show. So you'll be stuck with me for the next 20, 30 minutes or so. The Heat were in a close game for most of it. They were down early in the first quarter, playing on the second night of a back-to-back. But they had some good offense in the second quarter and early in the third. Actually were able to build a small lead there. And then, of course, the legendary third quarter problems of Miami kind of showed up again. They allowed the Wizards to come back, take the lead. In the fourth, Miami was down by as many as 6 points before finally evening it up and then going back and forth for the rest of the game. They were actually down one for the last minute of play and then had the ball in Dwayne Wade's hands with under 7 seconds to play. If you were expecting another clutch classic Wade situation, didn't quite work out that way. Instead of sealing the game, he missed a difficult 22-foot jumper that was contested. As time wound down, you could argue that maybe John Wall fouled him on the shot attempt, but it didn't matter because Kelly Olynyk, bouncing back from a really bad season opener in Orlando, slipped past Markieff Morris, who failed to box out, grabbed the rebound, and shut that DC crowd up with a putback when only 0.2 seconds left in the clock. On the ensuing inbounds play, Derrick Jones Jr. stole the pass from John Wall, and Miami leaves the nation's capital with their first win of the season, a one-point victory, 113-112 over Washington. Starting lineups were the same. Wayne Ellington and James Johnson both out still. Justice Winslow out. So Dragic, Richardson, Rodney Magruder, Derrick Jones, and Hassan Whiteside were the starting lineup. Not a great game from Miami, although it was a fun win. Miami was able to make the most of the situation despite a, you know, kind of uneven performance. They were able to pull out a victory, and you get them however you can. They were able to control the rebounding edge. They actually out-rebounded Washington 55-40, and that led to 27 second-chance points, so that's definitely a positive. They are still turning the ball over a little bit too much. They had 16 turnovers in the game, so not ideal. And you just don't really see much of a flow in the offense just yet. We might not ever see it, but there were moments there where the first team kind of looked a little choppy, not quite sure where to go to. Kind of the second team, actually, I thought performed a little bit better in spots, much more ball movement, and you started to see a little bit more comfort level there. So that's good, and I think this is where the team's depth comes into play. It could also be due to the fact that you have two potential starters in James Johnson, and Justice Winslow out of the lineup, and not to mention Wayne Ellington, who does make up for a number of errors, something we'll talk about later on in the show. And you're also keeping the games a little too close. I think this is indicative of what Miami is capable of. They're, unfortunately not particularly great in any one aspect. As Anthony Chang pointed out in his five takeaways of Thursday's win over Washington, the Heat led the league last season in close games, 53 in total, so that's an extraordinarily high amount, and I think it's just indicative of what this team is capable of. They kind of are good defensively. They try to keep you out of your rhythm. They limit what you can do, but they're not particularly potent offensively. They just do as much as they possibly can. There's no one explosive score that you're going to say, okay, this is a player that we're going to see go off for 40 points, so they kind of just try and muddy the waters. A little bit like Memphis's grit and grind team of a couple seasons ago, although that team, I think, was much better defensively, although that was probably well before the three-point explosion that change to the way offenses initiate scoring. So I don't know that the grit and grind success would have been duplicated in today's era of NBA basketball, but that's neither here nor there. It's mostly just about Miami not necessarily having a huge ceiling. They don't have the go-to superstar. They don't have a great defense either. They do just enough to kind of limit what you can do to help mitigate it, but they don't have a lockdown defender. And maybe that changes with Johnson and Winslow back in the lineup. So we'll see. John Wall had some moments there where he looked particularly impressive. He did finish the night with 26 points, second only to Josh Richardson, who had 28 points. And that's something we'll talk about in our second segment of the show when we look at what went right and what went wrong and where Miami's three-point shooting fits into that. Next. But first, a quick reminder that our written Miami Heat season preview is available now. I know Wes and I keep talking about it, but it's only because we are so proud of what we were able to accomplish. It's $3.99 if you buy it at gumroad.com/LOHPREV. And it's free if you sign up as a Locked On Heat lifer at our Patreon page at patreon.com/LockedOnHeat. That's only for $5 a month, but that gives you access to a whole bunch of stuff all season long, extra audio, not to mention, of course, our season preview. So trust me, I think the preview is a really good investment at only $4. It's not much of an expense. I know we're asking for a lot, but we really do believe in the strength of what we put together there. Great art, great content, some really good perspectives from writers around the league that know the Heat and know their own teams and put that in context. So definitely something you should check out. We've got some Twitter questions later on, but right now we'll talk about what went right and wrong in the win. What went wrong? So let's get that out of the way, first of all. Tyler Johnson continues to struggle. Finished with 9 points, but also 3 of 9 shooting, 1 of 5 at the line, and not making much of an impact in any way. Didn't have a good game against Orlando the night before. And moreover, you see that he can be exploited defensively. And maybe these are just recurring themes, but obviously a lot of our listeners and Heat fans in general are concerned about the fact that he's making as much money as he is. You could argue that he was a great value during the first 2 years of that contract. Now that he's getting paid closer to $20 million, you question why he's making that much money. And he's being exploited defensively. That's a problem. He's undersized, and he's not necessarily potent offensively. Shooting only 1 of 5 from three-point range. Last season, the strength of his game was catch and shoot threes. He was being asked to put up a lot of shots from the perimeter, and I think he's looking to do that now, but the shot isn't falling just yet. You trust that he's healthy and that he'll be able to continue knocking down that shot, hopefully closer to the 35 to 40% range. But right now, the offense isn't there, and so defensively, he's an issue as well. It's not great. It's not a great look for Tyler. You want him to be able to bounce back and kind of do enough to justify some of that money. Look, he's never going to be worth, quote-unquote worth, $20 million. That's not the reality. A $20 million player is somebody you expect to be a superstar or a fringe all-star or something along those lines, and Tyler will never reach that level. That's not to say that he can't be an effective sixth man. If that point scoring total was closer to 15, you could say that he's at least providing some punch off the bench. If he's not getting beat constantly by bigger guards, look, John Wall, Bradley Beal, Satoransky, other guys, look, Kelly Oubre, Austin Rivers, those are our longer guards. They definitely have a size advantage over Tyler, so they're going to be able to get that edge, and that showed, unfortunately. And so you hope that he's able to have more of a positive impact in the long run. What else went wrong? Goran Dragic did not have a good game, just as I suspected in the day before. Had a really, really strong showing against Orlando. And whether it was a combination of age, fatigue, or just the fact that he was going up against Beal and Wall, Dragic did not have a great night. 8 points on just 3 of 18 shooting. 3 of 18, 1 of 6 from three-point range. Did finish with 8 assists and chipped in 6 rebounds as well. But he looked like he had his hands full. And a lot of people really took to the timeline to suggest that, you know, he was past his prime and that, you know, that he wasn't able to hang with John Wall. And that's the reality. John Wall does make a lot of people look bad. He's an explosive scorer. And I know that's why a lot of people were interested in potentially acquiring a player like Wall if he was available via trade, as some rumors had suggested last year. I think we're just going to see more nights like this from Goran Dragic moving forward. It's going to be an up and down kind of season at almost 32 years of age. You know, you never know what you're going to get. And depending on the matchup, that's something where Dragic can potentially take advantage of. He's a very smart scorer. Obviously, we know that he's capable of shooting from the perimeter with a lot higher percentages than this, but, you know, not a good night for him. And then also not a good night for Hassan Whiteside. One of the themes for the season is whether or not Hassan continues to show the consistency that we need him to. We want him to be aggressive. We want him to be able to crash those boards with regularity. And did not have a great night against the Wizards. Finished with just 9 points. Did have 10 rebounds. Looked like he was out of sorts trying to match with Jan Mahimi. And that's with Dwight Howard, who was out of the lineup. So Wizards, Howard, who obviously missed the season opener there, but was acquired over the offseason. He's made things difficult for Hassan in the past, so that's something that Hassan should have been able to take advantage of. Unfortunately, he did not. Now, there was some moments there towards the end of the game where Whiteside was playing in clutch situations, so that's, I think, a sign of encouragement from Eric Spoelstra that he was able to field four other shooters, a smaller lineup with Hassan out there. So that's something to be encouraged by if you're a fan. And I think Whiteside handled himself pretty well in closing moments. Didn't really mess things up, which, you know, sometimes that's as good as it can get. So as far as what went right, I think Derrick Jones Jr. is something we should definitely be talking about. I know a lot of people expected him to make an impact. He does have that overall length and athleticism. We saw many, many great opportunities for him to get to the line. He did finish 6 of 9 from the free throw line. I think that long wingspan is just going to continue to draw some fouls. He's going to get, you know, some calls in his way because, look, there was one particular drive, I think, midway through the first quarter where he caught the ball, started pushing the pace up court, and then was able to just take flight past Markieff Morris, who kind of stood his ground and hoping to draw the charge. But because of Derek's flexibility and the fact that he can jump as high as he can, he was able to twist his body in midair, catch Markieff on the shoulder there, and then try to attempt a layup, which didn't fall, but he was able to get the call. It was a blocking call, and I think we're going to see that a lot more often because of his overall length and athleticism. It just catches defenders off guard. It's hard to kind of control those long limbs there. And he did finish 5 of 10 from the floor. 6 of 9, as I said, from the free throw line, and 1 of 2 from 3-point range. So starting to show a little bit more of a perimeter impact there, and that's something that we were hopeful that we'd see after his strong showing in Summer League. And he did have that huge steal at the end of the game to lock things in. Not that the Wizards had a great scoring opportunity with just 0.2 seconds left, but it's always good to have somebody like Derrick Jones out there to really impact that inbounds pass. So you wonder if Eric Spoelstra will go to that more often in the future. Something to look out for. Rodney Magruder is also one of the story of the game. 20 points, I think that's a career high. 7 of 12 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3-point range, so showing some real consistency out there in the perimeter, and 3 of 3 at the free throw line. That's really impressive. But he also chipped in 8 rebounds, 6 assists, you know, really, really strong showing, and a block as well. Did have 5 turnovers, so that kind of balances out the assists a little bit. Not a great ratio, and I think we saw, this should have been something I mentioned in the what went wrong section, but, you know, the ball handlers were a little sloppy with the ball. John Crotty, a former point guard, pointed out that they're not necessarily controlling the dribble and not looking to drive to the rim as much, instead settling for jump shots. But, you know, Rodney had a really solid night overall. Again, 20 points is a really impressive showing for him, and he had a nice chemistry going there with either Bam Adebayo or with Hassan Whiteside when they did play and share the floor. So that's something we'll definitely need to keep an eye out for. That pick and roll seems to be in his wheelhouse now, so definitely something that we'll, again, continue to monitor. We'll get to your Twitter questions next. But first, we wanted to let you know that we've created the ultimate NBA Twitter feed. We've talked about it before, but at Locked On NBA Net has all of your Locked On local experts on one feed. That's every NBA team covered there, every local angle. I know a lot of listeners want to focus just on our team, just on the Heat, but the reality is you should know about the other 29 teams to help stay informed, to let you know what those challenges are for Miami moving forward. So if you want to stay up to date on what's going on with those 29 teams, this is the thing for you. It's the ultimate Twitter follow. Local experts on every team on one Twitter feed. How can you beat that? So make sure you follow at Locked On NBA Net for the ultimate NBA Twitter experience. For game recaps this season, we're going to continue to take questions from you, just as we always have, about the game on Twitter. All you have to do is just respond to us, reply, and use the hashtag AskLOHeat. That's AskLOHEAT, and then we'll pick a few to answer. Let's start with this one from Claudia, who writes in, "We need threes." She's absolutely right. "We are really missing, quote, the man with the golden arm, Wayne Ellington. Who loses minutes when he comes back from injury? Is it Magruder? Is it Jones Jr.? Is it TJ, meaning Tyler? Is it all of them?" That's a great question, Claudia, and we appreciate you asking, as always. You're our favorite yoga instructor and listener. So as far as who gets those minutes, you're probably right. It's probably a little bit of all of them. You have to try and incorporate Ellington as much as possible. And one of the things that we've talked about a number of times is that he is a great resource on offense. He bailed out Miami on a number of occasions last season when he really came into his own and was the seventh most prolific shooter in the NBA last year. And you're going to find some ways of bringing him off the court. When you have nights like tonight when Tyler struggled a little bit and wasn't able to score much, you put Ellington out there and see what he can do offensively. It's not going to be much of a loss on the defensive side, which is where theoretically Tyler should make more of an impact. But right now, against those bigger guards, as I mentioned in a couple segments ago, that's not necessarily as much of an issue. So I think you want to be able to go with Ellington a little more often and have him, bail us out a little bit more as he can do. Unfortunately, with Rodney Magruder playing at such a high level, you don't want to take him off the floor, but I think that might be the reality. As far as Jones Jr., I don't know that he will have much of his time impacted. He's not going to be starting anymore once James Johnson and Winslow return to the lineup. The reality is those players are a little bit more polished, a little bit more experienced, and especially in Winslow's case, you want to be able to see what he can provide as a defensive player. While Derek shows upside in that avenue, I don't know that he's the kind of lockdown defender that Winslow is. So you can expect that his minutes are going to go down. And it's a challenge. Look, I mean, it's one of the recurring themes for this season. One of the things I got a chance to talk to Eric Spoelstra about on Media Day and in Orlando, he keeps talking about that versatility. And it's a great thing to have. It's a great problem to have. And that's at least how he sees it and how the front office sees it, is that you want to be able to go in there and bring guys in and have them be fresh. And that's going to impact everybody's numbers, but hopefully at least the idea is that they'll be able to make a positive impact for longer stretches, even if those overall minutes are shorter in the long run. Your production will go down, but as long as it translates into victories, it doesn't make much of it's not much of a concern. And that's another theme, at least among the players, is they're willing to sacrifice those numbers, if nothing else, because, well, they've all gotten paid. Most of the players on this team already have, it's much to the chagrin of some of our listeners and many Heat fans, they've already got those long-term deals secured. It's not like they're worried about putting 25 points up per night. And so it's not necessarily about that kind of individual production. Now you wonder for guys like Derek Jones Jr. And Magruder, who are playing for their next contract, and Adebayo to some extent, you wonder whether or not that's going to impact them, whether or not they'll try to look for their own shot a little bit more aggressively. But regardless, you're going to see some of those minutes get crunched. Some of that production is going to be lowered. But again, as long as it translates into some overall impact of winning, I think you're going to be quite happy with the results. Let's get to our next question. Billy writes in, "Richardson looks like he made the leap." Absolutely. "Could Richardson be greater than Jimmy Butler?" That is a heck of a question. A lot to unpack there, because we heard the reports that Pat Riley addressed the team. Pat Riley was in Orlando I saw him there myself, and then I assume that he traveled with a team to Washington. Him and Andy Ellisberg are both there. And you, again, you have to assume that they're kind of scouting the team, looking for what to expect out of them, and still trying to field these trade rumors as far as Butler's concerned. Now, we've heard some reports from Anthony Chang and Ira Winderman and other beat writers that Riley addressed the team and addressed those rumors and said, quote, that they're shutting everything down. They're not looking to make a trade right now. There are theories that that could be to light a fire under owner Glenn Taylor to understand that Miami is not as interested as possible in acquiring Jimmy Butler, something I know a lot of our listeners won't be happy to hear. But we'll see. You'll see how that moves forward. But right now, this team is the one we have, and Richardson has looked fantastic. Moreover, I think to Billy's question, he's looked really, really aggressive. You know, followed up a career-high 21 field goal attempts on Wednesday against Orlando to match that with 21 field goal attempts against the Wizards. He finished 8 of 21, finished with 28 points, and the difference between this and the night in Orlando was that he went 5 of 11 from three-point range. On top of that, the aggressive side of Richardson was that he was able to get to the free throw line a lot. 7 of 8 from the line, chipping in also 4 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and a block. Only 2 turnovers. A really efficient night there. And I think, to answer Billy's question, I think Richardson might actually be a more polished scorer than Jimmy Butler. I think Butler's hung his hat on his defensive intensity and has kind of just really worked to get to the point where he's an aggressive offensive player. But I think he also relies a lot more on getting to the line and creating contact. And his mid-range game, much like Dwayne Wade's, I think, is the strength of his offensive repertoire. The three-point shooting there, not nearly as prolific. And I think Richardson is capable of being a better shooter. So is Richardson potentially better than Butler in the long run? I think you could make that argument. I think you could say that he can make a more of an impact offensively. And I think it takes what we've seen over the last couple of games, that he can be more aggressive, that he's looking for a shot, that he's got the ball in his hands and is looking to take the team to the next level. And that is the way of this team moving forward. And we've heard reports. We've seen it. I've seen it. I've talked to Spoelstra about it. Richardson is going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to be the go-to scorer for this team, for better or for worse. On Wednesday against Orlando, didn't always work out that way, obviously, with the last play of the game where he turned it over being a major misstep there. But on Thursday against Washington, everything was more or less a positive, and he looked very, very aggressive. Took that shot, took several shots from behind the line, and it's good to see him put the Wednesday's game behind him. I was concerned that it might get into his head a little bit, and I think that's still the case with Josh, is that he's a little cerebral. He kind of gets a little hung up on bad nights, needs to focus a little bit more, and that's a challenge for a lot of NBA players. On top of the fit and the team chemistry and whether or not he has the ball in his hands, Josh has always had a problem making the most of those opportunities because he does get into his head a little bit. But I think if he's able to move past that, as he did on Thursday night, if he's able to get more opportunities as he has over the first two games, he's going to be a really good player. He might be an all-star. He might be a very, very, very good player moving forward. And it's hard to say whether or not he'll be better than Butler, because I think Butler's defense, particularly his man-to-man defense, is more like Winslow's than Richardson's. So I think he's still a better defender. And I don't know that Richardson's going to be getting those all-star nods the way Jimmy Butler did. But we'll see. For now, it looks like he's on that path towards probably having a better season than Butler. And maybe that's all you need. If that's the case, we were all, I think, a little upset that the trade didn't work out the way it had. One of the things I've talked about is that I wasn't sure that I wanted that deal in the first place, because I thought Richardson had that impact and that potential impact, and I thought he was poised to make that leap. So it looks like I've been proven right so far. And, you know, as far as the trade is concerned, if it does wind up shutting down the way Pat Riley intimated, then Richardson's strong night is a very good indicator that Miami's going to be in a good place moving forward. You know, it does impact the team's ability to lure other quality free agents next year. You wonder what the team's overall ceiling will be with a guy like Richardson. But for now, it's a good step. And I think Miami Heat fans should be encouraged about what we see. But that's all we have for now. The Heat will take Friday night off before hosting the Charlotte Hornets on Saturday, who will be on the second night of a back-to-back. They will be in Orlando Friday night and then traveling down to Miami on Saturday. That will be the first of four games at home, so that's a great opportunity for Miami to make a real strong impact in the winning circle. We'll be back on Monday with a recap of that game and to bring you the latest news and open up the mailbag as always. Thank you so much to all of our listeners who submitted questions during the game. We want to continue to hear from you. We don't say it enough, I think, but we love hearing from our listeners. We love the interaction on Twitter. So keep up the great work. And please, of course, keep following us and making sure that you do stay in touch using the hashtag LOHeat. As always, you can reach us by email. Send one to lockedonheat@gmail.com. And of course, make sure to hit subscribe on the iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever you use to listen. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.